Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck and Chad Markowitz, your hosts for this weekend show. We're going to be focusing initially on precious metals and the precious metals stocks. Unfortunately, the downtrend that continues, but it's a short-term downtrend, trying to figure out where the value lies. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to be looking more big picture. We have a lot of stuff to recap from this week, which we did in some daily editorials, but big tech earnings, the Fed meeting, and the continued geopolitics in the Middle East. A lot of information, but also a lot of information that we came out with throughout the week on our website, kereport.com. And you can find us on your podcast player or on YouTube. Just search the KE Report. We're kicking off this weekend show with Dave Erfley. Dave is the founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, big picture, let's just look at precious metals and the precious metal stocks. They are continuing to drift lower. This is at least a couple month correction, and it's following, one could say, maybe a very technically sound correction here, stair-stepping the way down. Question more being, where's the bottom here? One thing that's really stood out to me is volume is almost non-existent. It's dried up this month. What's your takeaway? What's caught your eyes on this downtrend?
I mean, you took away what I was going to bring up. I mean, the gold price just continues to experience this wild volatility throughout the Iran war, but volumes are decreasing. And like you said, the commitment of traders volumes have collapsed down to like 20-year lows. Even as gold remains in an uptrend, and you know what that tells me, I mean, usually they go up in tandem, right? You see open interest go up as the gold price goes up. But what this is telling us, this happening now with open interest collapsing while the gold price is still in a strong uptrend, is it's rising without the usual paper gold that drives speculation and leverage. But at the same time, you've got the physical buying from central banks being strong. So it's paper buying is normally speculative and leverage, and physical buying is strong with happening from the central banks. So recently, these speculators have been hesitating because gold stock, I mean, the stock market is back at all-time highs again. So it's party on again, risk on again. So they're forgetting about speculating in the gold price. So while gold is rising without them, central banks continue to have their strongest official sector buying in more than half a century, right? I mean, World Gold Council forecasts like another 750, 800, 850 tons in 2026. And that's a fifth of annual global mine supply. And that's purchased regardless of price, right? Central banks don't care about price. They're purchasing to diversify away from the dollar, especially when you got a central bank like China, who's bought now for the 17th consecutive month. They continue to buy. And what they're buying with is U.S. treasuries that they continue to sell. So that's a double positive for the gold price.
Well, Dave, when we look at where the numbers are, I mean, 4,600s for gold or anywhere in the mid 4,000s is still a pretty good price. Copper's still up pretty close to $6. Silver's in the mid 70s. These are prices that people would have died to see a couple of years ago or even decades ago. The fact that we're up here now, even in inflation-adjusted terms, these are solid prices for producers. They're good prices for development stage projects. If you make a discovery as an explorer, you're going to get rewarded with metals prices at these levels. Do you think the sentiment has shifted so much because we had that sugar high in January and then, you know, a little bit of a rebound in February and then just the crash and burn in March, that in April it seems like sentiment has been more damaged than the prices?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the gold price, right? I mean, it's since Trump won the election, it more than doubled, and the silver price quadrupled. I mean, that's a huge move. We had those parabolic spike highs. That needs to consolidate. I mean, usually those parabolic spikes are related to, end of moves, right? I mean, you see a parabolic spike like that and you think, okay, the bull market is over. But that's not the case with gold and silver because the fundamentals driving it are stronger than ever. What we mentioned about the central banks continue to buy, but the U.S. debt, not only U.S. debt, but global debt continues to rage out of control. And, we had more this Thursday, we're talking this morning, right after Fed speak yesterday, the gold price, gold price ran down and it tested strong support at 40, strong weekly support at 4,500, and silver strong weekly support at 70. And they're bouncing here as the first estimate of the U.S. GDP rose just 2%. But core inflation, the PCE inflation that the Fed looks at increased to 3.2%. That's stagflation remaining a concern, right? So, and at the same time, the debt continues to rage out of control with no impetus to stop it. And Trump announced they announced the budget deficit recently, the budget recently, and they want to add 1.5 trillion to military spending. That's an increase of 40%. So, there's no impetus to stop the debt continuing to soar, and the Fed can't do anything about that, right? The Fed has no voice there. So this is why, Federal Reserve Chairman, outgoing Federal Reserve Chairman now, he was bold enough to say in front of a bunch of Harvard students several weeks ago that the U.S. debt is unsustainable. And they have to do something, or else we're talking about a financial collapse here. So the gold price is just biding its time here. And what really, encourages me as far as the gold price is concerned is this is happening, like we talked about on the open interest. The interest has dried up, the volume has dried up. And if you're talking about stocks, we just closed the month here. We're talking on Thursday. We just closed the month. For the month of April, the GDX was down around 4%. But the GDXJ was down less. That's a little higher risk, right? That was down to like a little over 3%. But the venture is up 3.5%. The ventures, the TSX ventures, where about 60% of the ventures made up of these higher risk juniors. So I don't see any panic selling now that all the deleveraged selling, because we had a 35% quick 35% correction in the mining sector, right? And that was mostly for reasons of after a parabolic spike, you're going to see some natural profit taking, and also the deleveraging that took place in the stock market, it hit gold stocks as well, because margin call clerks don't care about fundamentals. Anything is sold when there's deleveraging going on. So, I mean, this is all bullish action as far as I'm concerned, in as far as the gold stocks are concerned. I mean, you had some of these things go up 5, 10, 15 times, in a short period of time. And sure, they've come off maybe 50%. That's a natural correction in this sector. And it's natural that you're going to see some profit taking. I mean, my subscribers and I did the same thing when these things started to go parabolic. I mean, that's what you do in these strong bull market runs, right? You trim the rhino horns, and then when you see the fishing lines, you either accumulate stocks that you missed, or you finish the buying in the ones that you've already started to accumulate. I mean, that's just how you play a bull market in the mining sector.
Yeah, well, the question being just how much lower and how much longer could this correction last? And outside of those long-term fundamentals, if we look at some of the short-term charts, I'm curious what you're looking at on those charts, because Chad's brought up a couple of times and even written about this. This right now is playing out to be an ABC correction. It's almost textbook right now. But when you look at some of the moving averages, I find it interesting, at least just on the daily chart. Go to the longer chart, all these moving averages are still supportive of price because, well, price just separated so much from them. But looking at GLD, the daily chart, the 50-week or 50-day moving average is now, at least in the very short term, looking like resistance. GLD just bounced off of that. And in GDX, GDXJ, and GLD, we are approaching a rising 200-day moving average. For GLD, it's about 8% lower than where it is now, but that is still rising. How critical is it going to be to maybe hold these moving averages, or just more big picture, what levels are you watching that will, at least from a technical basis, still keep you in the bullish stance?
Yeah, for gold right now, if you're talking about the 200-day moving average, we had a quick test, right? When the gold corrected, that had that 27% correction in a short period of time, came down and quickly intraday tested its 200-day moving average. At that time was around 4,100. And that was at the end of March. Now here we are at the end of April, and that 200-day moving average is around 4,250. So the first line I'm looking at for strong weekly support is 4,500. We came down and tested that here right at the end of April. And like I said before, we're bouncing from it into month-end book squaring here on the last day of April. And in the silver price, as far as lower levels to look for on the gold price, there's that 4,200, 4,250 level. I would not like to see that broken on even on a daily basis. That would bring into play the 3,950, 4,000 level. But as far as a catalyst for that, I mean, sure, the Iran war. I mean, if you look at the Strait of Hormuz, which the U.S. continues to blockade, and it's costing Iran like $470 million a day for them not being able to run oil out of there. So the U.S. is obviously playing the waiting game, thinking they're going to capitulate. But what it's doing is it's screwing up, you know, the economies of the EU and Asia. You know, a lot of these in Asia, they're talking about rationing. In the EU, in Asia, they're already rationing. In the EU, they're discussing rationing. So this is not good for global economies. And Trump has basically said, you know, we're basically energy sufficient here, we're oil sufficient here, so it doesn't really affect us that much. So we can wait it out. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens if the Iran war heats up and oil prices spike above $120 a barrel. I mean, they went up to 126 briefly this morning. But as far as the gold price is concerned, you know, there's going to be a time when it's going to be a geopolitical hedge again. And it's also going to be a hedge against the fears of the sovereign debt crisis happening. Because like I said, the U.S. just continues to pile onto the debt and there's just no end in sight. So that's got the Fed stuck, right? All they could do is continue to say, we can't raise rates. We can't lower rates, so we're just going to keep rates where they are. If they raise rates, that hurts the growth that's already slowing down, the U.S. growth that's already slowing down. And if they lower rates, that makes the inflation rise even more. So they're stuck. They're stuck in this stagflationary quagmire. So there's only a matter of time before the gold price starts reacting to that.
Well, Dave, it's going to be a wild journey in the metals, as always, because there is a lot of macro and geopolitical forces all tugging at a market that has multiple drivers and multiple catalysts. But let's shift it over to the stocks themselves, because a lot of people listening are invested in the gold and silver and copper stocks. And so I know that's something that you really write about a lot to your subscribers as far as special situations. One thing we can say is we have seen an uptick in M&A. And so whether investors are capitalizing in on it or not, these companies are, and we've seen a range of them, probably almost a dozen just in the last few months. But some of the higher profile ones maybe we can look into was G2 Goldfields in Guyana being taken over by G Mining, which made sense as they had already taken over Reunion there just a year or two ago. And then the biggest profile one is probably Agnico Eagle, one of the largest gold miners on the planet, definitely the best run one, taking over two positions in Finland, both Rupert Resources and Orion Resources. All of these are showing pretty high levels for ounce in the ground valuations. And it's, I guess, encouraging to people looking at other development plays on who could be next if maybe we start seeing bigger valuations on development projects. What do you take away from the M&A in the sector?
Yeah, it's positive. You know, it's funny. I'm kind of happy, sad about the Agnico news, because I watched them let Probe go for $58 an ounce on the ground, and it's basically right in their neighborhood, and they've got the Malartic mine that's going to run out of ore right when Novador is expected to be fully permitted to feed that mill, and they let it go to an outsider in Fresnillo to dilute the workforce and take it for only $58 an ounce, and yet they're paying, what is it, like $680 an ounce for Rupert, and then for Orion they're basically paying. They don't even know what they're paying because they don't have any defined resources. But that's very good for the mining sector. And also the G2 Goldfields takeover was that was an obvious one, right? Because Orko and Orko West also obviously need to be combined. But that was taken out for $600 an ounce, and it's the project is still at the PEA stage. So this is very positive for the sector. It's good to see these projects being taken out at such a high value. So there's probably room for for some mid-level value for $280, $300, $350 an ounce in the ground. So, our portfolio is the JMJ portfolio is chock full of companies that are at, the finance stage, or they're at the construction stage, or they've just put out fantastic feasibility studies that are just ripe for takeovers. So, it wouldn't bother me to have, nice premiums for some of these other companies of ours to be taken over after the takeover of Arizona Sonora, and that which fortunately we own, kicked off this next wave of M&A right after during PDAC.
So, Dave, if we're looking at the acquirers out there, Agnico now has their hands full. They spent a little over $3 billion consolidating Finland. I don't think they're going to be out there buying anybody else in the near term. Who do you think could be on the acquirer front? What are the companies you're looking at that you think don't have their hands full right now that could be out there buying some of these assets?
Well, I've got a top five of the companies that we own in the JMJ portfolio as near-term candidates. And at the top of that list, I've discussed this before, is Abra Silver. They just announced they got their environmental permit, which is, the major hurdle in permitting. Everything else is basically a formality after that. They're about to announce any day now their definitive feasibility study for their project. They just also announced more fantastic drill results, making that project even bigger. Yet they really haven't announced that they haven't really hired any mine builders, and they've yet to start. They haven't made any inroads towards a financing package. I mean, this is a project that's about to be not only shovel ready, but it's about to announce a definitive feasibility study at the same time. So, that tells me that this company will probably be acquired pretty soon. And Kinross, you would think would be, on the top of that list, already owning 4% of the stock. But, that's a small amount. So you would think maybe if Kinross makes a bid, maybe Pan American Silver might make a bid, a better bid. I don't know. I'd love to see a bidding war for this project, because arguably they control now that the unfortunate situation at Vizsla happened, they arguably hold, the best primary silver project controlled by a junior in the market right now. So, yeah, I would think Kinross would be a bidder for that.
Yeah, a lot of people have been speculating on what Kinross could buy, because they do have a lot of money. And there's a couple other ones like AngloGold Ashanti, and Goldfields has a lot of 50% JVs that they could take the rest of the 50% over. So there's definitely some majors out there. But I think a lot of people get fixated on the biggest, the Newmonts, the Barricks, the Agnicos, and they forget there's a couple dozen mid-tiers of various sizes that could still make a go at some of these juniors. What do you think about the propensity of some of the mid-tiers to get in the mix?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, and you're bringing up Newmont. During the conference call, one of the analysts asked the CEO if they were going to concentrate on M&A now. They announced another $6 billion share buyback. They announced $3.1 billion in free cash flow for the quarter. That's like $1 million a day. I mean, they're just making gobs of money. They keep announcing these share buybacks. So they've got plenty of money to do another acquisition, but the CEO said they're not concentrating on acquisitions right now. So evidently you could take Newmont out of that. But yeah, I agree with you. There could be, these other companies. I mean, I think Alamos reported today. I haven't had a chance to go over there financial report for their quarterly report for today. But I would think, they're probably wanting to add more. They haven't had an acquisition in a while. It's what was it, last year where they bought the Argonaut mine. So, I mean, there's plenty of other mid-tiers out there that could acquire another company as well. I mean, it's what was it this year already? We've had 20, I think it's 21.5 billion, which is the highest since 2003. I mean, it's really starting to heat up, and that's usually when it starts to heat up, when the gold price goes higher, not when it goes lower. These guys should be concentrating on buying ounces in the ground when the gold prices go lower, but that's not when they do it. They always wait till the gold price going higher. I mean, I remember M&A peaked in 2010, 2011, right when the gold price was going above 1800. So yeah, I mean, we still got a long way to go in this bull market, and these companies are so flush with cash. Their balance sheets are really healthy now. They're paying these dividends. They paid off their debt. I mean, they're really in a great place right now to add more ounces via, acquisitions.
They are, and they've been building cash. That's the other thing. They do have a war chest to go after these, but quick recap of Alamos's numbers. It was a strong quarter, revenue, earnings, but the stock is down as we're recording this. It's only down about just under 2%. It was down almost 6% today, and that's because they said the costs were just a little bit higher than expected. But look, that does put kind of a focus on these earnings, right? Newmont had really strong earnings. It went up, I think, almost 9% on the day they reported, but then it reversed again because, well, the market has shown that everyone is focused on the trend in the metals price. And quite frankly, all these companies do have higher cost forecasts as well, but they're also still making money at these prices. But Dave, when we're looking at these earnings, look, they're all good. All revenue numbers are good. Costs are creeping up as they always do, though that happens really all the time. So what's going to drive these large cap stocks then, if it almost seems like the market is expecting these higher earnings, but again, the metals price, it's boring right now.
That's the thing. I mean, what Newmont's all-in sustaining costs were less than 1,100, and the average gold price for Q1 was 4,900. That's a margin of $3,900 per ounce. Like you said, the stock did go up 9% on the day, but then all of a sudden, it's like, that's already priced in now. We're looking at the future because the oil price continues to go higher, and Newmont has these really, large open pit mines that require a lot of diesel, and that's 15-20% of their costs right there. So that's what the market's looking at. It's that oil price, right? So yeah, I mean, that's the gold price has got to remain above 4,500, I think, or else you're going to see, these miners have a little more downside no matter what their financials look like for Q1, because the market's looking out at Q2 now with the oil price being that's probably going to remain above $100 a barrel for the foreseeable future here in the short to intermediate term, unless Iran capitulates, and I don't see that happening. So yeah, I mean, that's what the market concentrates on. It's like that old joke in the stock market. You've got your best performing stock, you call up the CEO and you say, how are profits? I mean, how's everything going? He says, oh, profits are up the highest they've ever been. We're making so much money, it can't get any better. And if it can't get any better, it can only get worse. So that's why I think the market's focusing on that oil price.
Well, Dave, just talking about getting better or getting worse, when you look at companies, a lot of them are doing hard work. They've raised money, they've got work programs with the drill bit or resource expansion, resource updates, economic studies. A lot of catalysts, a lot of milestones are happening. Now, for a while, we were seeing good news getting sold off, which was disappointing during that capitulation event or deleveraging event you've highlighted. But lately, we've seen good news start getting rewarded again. You had mentioned a couple off mic just that you're noticing investors are getting traction. You already kind of highlighted Abra Silver there, but there's a couple other stocks that are getting rewarded on good news.
Yes, I've got several companies that, one a couple of weeks ago announced a fantastic feasibility study. The stock went to all-time highs. earlier this week, another earlier exploration stage company came out with a resource update that was fantastic, and it had a huge move to the upside, and it's breaking out to multi-year highs. So the oil price doesn't affect these companies that aren't producing gold, right? They're still de-risking their projects, and they're putting out, good drill results, or they're putting out good economics, robust economic studies. The oil price doesn't affect them, and I think that's the reason why you see what I mentioned earlier. The TSX Venture was up 3.5% in April. It continues to show relative strength, and even the GDXJ shows relative strength to the GDX, even though the GDXJ is mostly a mid-tier ETF. It does have several developers in it, but it's mostly a mid-tier ETF. But still, and I know that the TSX Venture is not the best barometer for the juniors. That's why I like to use my own portfolio as a barometer for the junior sector, because we own 23 high quality juniors in various phases. Some are growth oriented producers, but most are earlier stage companies that are basically later stage companies, but that aren't producing gold, or they're earlier stage companies yet to put out a PEA or yet to put out a feasibility study. And so my portfolio is up 19% this year. Even and if you take a look at the GDX and GDXJ, they've basically given back almost all their gains. So that tells you right there that good news continues to be rewarded in these higher risk juniors that are putting out positive news, positive results. They've all cashed, the good ones, they've all cashed up. They don't have to worry about any more dilution. They've got large drill programs, or they've got catalysts of feasibility studies or PEAs coming out, or even updated mineral resource estimates coming out that the market expects to be good. So that's why when you have an intermediate term high like we had in the gold price and the silver price, that's when you start to have a consolidation of that move, which we're in the second month now. So when it's kind of boring and there's low volume and the attention has now drifted away from the gold sector, even though it's been one of the best performing sectors in the market over the past few years. That's when you accumulate shares, right? I mean, you don't accumulate when these stocks are rising. That's when you're trimming and taking some profits off the table. You accumulate, when they've had these 50% or 40% corrections. And the only reason why they've had these corrections is because A, deleveraging in the marketplace that happened for those 3 weeks, and B, profit taking. So that's when you start to, that's when you're supposed to be accumulating. So, and I'm like I said, I like to see it because I've got a lot of new subscribers and they're still accumulating. So this is good news for us to see this accumulation process. So these newer subscribers of mine are able to get in at lower risk prices.
So, Dave, if you're accumulating now, what sort of, I guess, barometer do you have to understand that the stocks could keep trending a little bit lower if these metals prices are? So, what is the strategy to accumulate in a at least short-term downtrending market?
Well, they need to be stock specific, right? I mean, you don't look at the sector, you don't look at the GDX and say, "Oh, wow, look at this. It looks like the GDXJ is going to go down to possibly test its 200-day moving average and maybe even go lower if gold loses $4,500." Announce on a weekly closing basis. You don't look at that. What you do is you look at the catalysts of the individual company, right? If it's an earlier stage company, are they about to put out an updated mineral resource? Are they about to put out a maiden PEA? What does it look like? The numbers are going to look like? Have they got enough cash? Is the share structure tight? You look at all these things, company specific, before you get into them. And then, you do a little charting. You take a look at near-term support levels and even longer-term support levels and say, okay, I'll accumulate some on this near-term support level, and hopefully it goes lower so I can accumulate, so I can complete the position at a lower support level. So, that's what you have to have the mindset of looking at these corrections as good things, not bad things.
Yeah, that is true. And hey, it's giving an awesome buying opportunity to a lot of stocks that you, if you like these stocks on the way up, a lot of these stocks are 40, 50% lower, some even more than that. I would argue some deserve to be down at that level and some got too far ahead of themselves, but there are a lot of good plays out there that have also sold off with the market. So you just need the stomach to maybe weather a little bit more selling because some of the technical traders on our site have said that this correction could extend for another couple months, if not a few more months on top of that. So again, it's all just understanding where we are in this cycle, and it is still that bullish outlook longer term, but we do need to be aware of some more technical levels that we are approaching, especially in the gold price. Dave, we'll wrap it up here. Thanks for taking time with us on this weekend show. And again, everybody, if you want to check out Dave's newsletter, click the link in the show notes or search Junior Miner Junkie. Dave, thanks so much for your time, everyone. Stick around. We're going to be right back.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.